Okay, good afternoon, guys. Thank you very much for coming along to this tail-end session. Understand I'm between you and a party, so let's get this underway. So my name is James. I work for DillageNet. We're an Australian-based Microsoft Gold partner, specializing in deployment management virtualization. Config Manager is my thing. And what we want to talk about, obviously, today is a bit of a deep dive into the app model in Configuration Manager 2012. Now, the application model is essentially something that radically changes the way you, as Configuration Manager administrators, get to manage your applications. Deploying them, managing them throughout the entire lifecycle. There's also a huge amount of new logic embedded into it, which allows you to do your jobs much, much easier. So let's just take a quick overview of what I want to talk about today. We're going to go straight into deployment types. So deployment types is where a lot of the magic occurs, especially around things like dependencies, requirements, and the detection methods which are used for each and every type. We'll also take a look at supersedence. When a new version of an application comes on board, how do you get that to override another one, and what are your options? We'll take a quick look at the Package Conversion Manager. It's normally designed for a migration, but it's also a really, really useful tool to have in your arsenal. We'll take a bit of a look at the client-side experience, so what do your users actually see, and we'll also take a look at how the app model works during operating system deployment. Now, actually, I should blank the screen initially. Also notice we've got these two wonderful RC choppers at the front, which are mine to give away to you. So I've been trying to work out what's the best way to do it. Stu Fox did one for the best tweet on the management 402 hashtag. Sorry, that's mine. So we'll do that for one of them. So it's MGT402, best tweet. The other one, a little subjective, but I'll give that one out to the best question, which I'll define as the one on Config Manager app model that I can't answer. Not like, could you please say that in Spanish or anything along those lines. So it's a deep dive, so think deep and see if you can trip me up. If you can, chop is yours. All right, so deployment types. Deployment types are what actually handles the delivery of each and every application. Now, it can take multiple types. So you can use MSIs, you can use native script exes, you can use batch files if you really want to, or appv. Each application can handle multiple types. So you can have an MSI for deploying Adobe Reader, as well as an appv version, as well as an MSI which launches an RDS session as well. You use logic within each and every type to work out which one of those your user is going to get. Dependencies are essentially a prerequisite deployment type. So when you deploy one particular application, what you're basically saying is that before you can install, something else must be installed first. A great example of this, we can't really see that screenshot. Okay, that's a dependency chain for the appv agent. So if you've ever installed appv from MSI, you know that it needs a couple of versions of Visual C. It also needs the application error reporter. Now, all of those must be installed first, and if you install an MSI, it doesn't go through and do that for you. So what you can do in Config Manager instead is blank the screen. What you can do in Config Manager instead is say, okay, before you install, you must install this, and then this, and then this, and then this. And it will go through and sort that out. But you've only deployed one application, which is the end one that you're interested in, the appv agent. All the rest of it is taken care of. They're configured per deployment type. So as I mentioned earlier, every application can have multiple types, and every deployment type can have or has a unique set of dependencies if needed. They're managed in clusters. So for example, appv is another good one. It needs Visual C 2005, Visual T 2008, but there are multiple versions of each one. So there's the base one, there's the one with ATL update, the MFC update. Now, it might be that the application you're going to deploy only needs one of those. It doesn't actually matter which one. So you can then specify as a dependency, as long as one of these applications is installed, that's okay. I don't really care which one. If none of them are installed, I want you to install this one. And we'll take a look at that. So if there's a dependency there, it isn't there, it's automatically remediated. It's also honored during operating system deployment. So when you want to install an application like the AppV agent and you've set up a dependency chain, when you call that during an OSD task sequence, all you need to do is add in that end application that you're interested in. Config Manager will work out what else is needed and sort that out on the fly. Requirements. Essentially a test. So before an application can be installed, or before a deployment type will be installed or actioned, it's going to run a test for a particular value, a particular property. Now, that could be anything. That could be, I want to make sure that you're installing on a 64-bit version of Win 7. Maybe it's a case of, I want to test whether you have at least 2 gig of RAM, or whether you've got 20 gig hard drive space free. Again, it's per deployment type, so each of your types can have multiple requirements, and that's normally how you would actually check to see which deployment type is going to get pushed out. Each one supports multiple ones, but they're broken up by categories. So device is basically anything to do with the machine which it's going to be pushed out to, so RAM, hard drive space, OS type, and so on. A user test is where we get into the whole user device affinity area of Config Manager 2012. Has anyone played around with that, UDA, a little bit? Yeah. So UDA is essentially the architecture by which Config Manager treats your users just the same as it does machines. So in Config Manager 2007, really the machine came first. The users could be there or not, it didn't really matter. But in 2012, your users are just as important. You can target them. So UDA allows you to establish a relationship between a user and a machine and then action that appropriately. So you can do a deployment type such as, I'm happy for an MSI version of Firefox to be distributed, but only to these users and only when they are logged on to their primary computers. If they go and log on anywhere else, I don't want them to get that MSI. They might have an AppV version or they might have an RDS version instead. And the last bit is detection methods. So this is essentially the logic by which Config Manager assesses whether or not an application is actually there. So it's particularly useful for when you're going to do a deployment and it checks something like the presence of an MSI code. And it says, no, this application is actually already installed. I don't need to process this any further. But it's also what Config Manager uses in order to make sure that an application has been properly installed. So it's not like CM7 where when you push an application out, Config Manager assumes, yep, everything's good because I pushed it out. It didn't actually fail, but I don't know what a fail would have looked like anyway. What Config Manager 2012 does is say, okay, you've told me to install it. You've also given me a rule by which at the end of that, I'm going to run this check, and if it passes that check, then everything is good. So in an MSI, it's usually the MSI code, but you can do your own custom ones as well. So you can check for whether a file now exists which didn't exist previously. It can either just be an existence check. It can be a particular version check. You can check the registry, whatever you want to do. You can also use a custom script. So you can use JScript, VBScript, or PowerShell, however you prefer to do that, to make sure that an application is actually there. So let's take a look as to what some of this stuff looks like. I had a demo originally. Now, I'll use Zoom because it's a fairly high res. I had originally a number of applications lined up to prove different aspects of what I've just shown you until our wonderful friend, our wonderful non-enterprise friend, Adobe Reader, came along and tripped the life out of me. And in order to get that working properly, it works really well, but you've essentially got to use every single aspect of what I just showed you. So it makes quite a good demo platform. So what I've got is, let's say that the version I want to deploy is, we'll go with this one. It is the latest one after all. So it's Adobe Reader 10.1.4. Now this has multiple deployment types. A couple of them are just standard MSPs, okay? Because when you download the so-called enterprise version of Adobe Reader, when you download the latest version and you extract it into an MSI, what does it not do? It doesn't give you a patched version of the MSI. It's the base version. You then have to go and get an MSP and patch it after that. So the way I've set it up here is that, well, I don't really want to go and do a full install for each version. I don't care, okay? It's just an MSP, and that's fine. Now, these particular deployment types are using what's called a native script. So they're calling MSI exec, but when we go through and make a new application within the CM12 console, our only options are MSI, not MSP, MSI, appv, or I think Nokia or Windows Mobile Cab, because everyone's deploying to those. But the reason for that is because MSIs, appv, and so on, contain information which Config Manager can use to populate properties. For example, when you import an MSI, it reads the MSI code. So it uses that as a check. When you bring in appv, it reads the manifest file. If you point it at an MSP, it doesn't really know what to do with that. So it's looking for manual information from you. So what I've done in this one, said, okay, this is just a straightforward MSI exec slash p command, no problem. The uninstall program is actually using the MSI code of the base Adobe 10.1.0, because when you patch it, it doesn't change the code. Now, I needed to provide that information. It was all manual. How do I know it's been successfully installed? When, at the end of it, there's that version of that file present. If that's there, everything is good. It's got quite a nice way of actually allowing you to find that. So let's say I wanted to generate a new one. I can browse to another computer which has the application installed, which I'm interested in, take a look at the local file system, and it's not installed there. Oh, I uninstalled it earlier on, so it isn't there. But anyway, that's how I set that one up. Essentially, point to it. It grabs information off it, values, properties, timestamps, size, and so on, and you can use any of them, all of them, none of them, whatever you like. It's also got a requirement on it. Now, I had to break it up into 64-bit and 32-bit because the file goes into a different location. On a 64-bit PC, it goes into program files x86, and on a 32-bit computer, it goes into program files, and there's no one environment variable that you can call on that's going to grab both of those. So even though it's a 32-bit app which is being installed and the patch works exactly the same way for each one, I've had to break it up just to cater for that. But I can simply by saying, okay, you can only run, this particular patch can only run if there's a 64-bit operating system. So. Yes, the way, it depends on the detection method that's available to you. Okay, so if the MSP, for argument's sake, generated a new MSI code, I would have checked for that rather than for the existence of a...
You're looking for
the file path is different.
Your program file would be program file x86.
Yes.
So it wouldn't matter that you're running it on 64.
Okay, true. Okay, so you're basically saying, why do I have a requirement in there when we know that the file path is going to be separate anyway? Because this is a requirement to say whether or not this particular deployment type is even going to trigger. This, the detection method, which jumps in and checks for that, for this file in that location is the check to say whether or not it's been actually run. Okay, so that kicks in after it's run, which by that time is too late. Yes. Yeah. So you're talking about that one there. Yeah. So run installation and uninstallation. This. Okay. So the properties of this is checking that on or off. You might be in the running for the chopper here. So let's just see how we go. The properties of this is essentially if you have an application which can't handle the Windows on Windows 64 environment, okay, this one can. It isn't a problem. You don't need to tell Config Manager to run it in any particular way. It's actually fine. Okay, I get what you're saying, but without having specifically tested that scenario, I can't say yes or no. I take your word for it that's how it behaves. But more of an example to the options of how a requirement worked. This is essentially the process I went down. If that's the behavior that you get, whereby specifying that and you just overcome all of that and it's all good, no problem. Okay, so that's really one of the, I guess, both the nice and the intensely frustrating thing about Config Manager. It's a very open framework. It doesn't tell you how to do any one particular task. There's usually three or four ways of doing every single task. And often not one of them is particularly wrong. Okay, so as you've illustrated, you know, there are other ways of handling this. They might be preferable. Okay. The other requirement which I've thrown in here is a user check. So the user must be logged on to their primary device. Why? Because in this particular environment, I don't want a user to be able to locally install Adobe Reader. Sorry, unless they're actually logged on to their computer. I don't want Adobe Reader as part of my SOE, but there are advantages for it to being on a user's laptop. Everywhere else, I want it to be AppV. But we'll take a look at that. And so in order to achieve that, we've got a dependency, which is a previous version of the application. So what this dependency check does, it runs through and says, OK, I'm going to install Adobe 10.1.4. But in order to do that first, I've got to install 10.1.0. That's the full application. And then the /p comes along subsequently, patches it. So let's take a look at that. So if I jump across to one of my other programs. Now, I've actually got Adobe Reader 10.1.3 advertised to this particular user. So here we're looking at the application catalog, which is a web-based front end for your users to access their applications. The reason why I've got 10.1.3 advertised here is that so I can then show supersedence with 10.1.4. Okay, so it's the only reason it's there. So we'll jump into that, kick off install. Now, what the application catalog is going to do at this point is do an instant policy wake up to the local Config Manager agent. So normally policy refreshes every hour, say. So if we look in the software center, what we should see is an installation status of... We are not seeing 10.1.3, that's okay because... I superseded it. That's okay. There we go. It's not started for a particular reason. And I think that particular reason. Now, one thing I want to specify is that this is not a demo fail. This is an unscheduled learning opportunity. Big difference. All right, I might just log onto another machine and do it from there. I haven't installed it here. So yeah, normally your machine checks back every 60 minutes and so on to find out what new updates are available, grab policies, see what else is out there, new applications and so on. When you do a user base installation from the application catalog, it sends a policy wake up instantly. So the user experience for targeting apps to users rather than to targeting the machines which your users are using ends up being quite a nice experience for your users to get the applications that they need. Hello. All right. You don't like that either. That's interesting. As we said, every one is an opportunity to learn something more. So my guess is that, let's take a look at the primary users. I'm a primary user. So if you haven't already looked at the user device affinity and establishing relationships between users and computers, this is essentially where it occurs, or one of the areas where it occurs. So users up here, Config Manager picks up over time. It looks at which users are logging on. Okay, so it basically works out, hey, look, these particular users have logged on quite a bit. They are potential candidates to be primary users. Using policy, you can say, okay, when a user has logged on so many times or spent so many hours logged on, they are a primary user. Okay, just assume it. It's fine. Or as an administrator, you can jump in here and say, all right, that user here, no problem, add them in, and maybe search for another one, and it's going to do a quick population, and you can grab, add them in too. You can also specify it during operating system deployment. So my guess as to why this is occurring is because I did not make my propitiations to the unscheduled learning opportunity deities. Yes. So the question is, can primary user be done through something like Orchestrator? Yep, absolutely. So essentially, the way Config Manager works, all of its management framework is exposed out through WMI. Okay, so any user with enough credentials to make a change can hook into that remotely and essentially make a change. So yes, absolutely, you could do that, no problem. Take a look at the application automation workflow. So it's an add-on. It's a number of orchestrated runbooks that plug into Service Manager and Config Manager that when you deploy an application to your users which requires administrative approval, instead of being locked within the Config Manager console, it actually spins up a Service Manager request instead. So yes, there's absolutely automation that you can do. You could definitely do that. Yep, no problem, sir. So the question is, can you use information here to populate the primary computer objects or property of a user objects within AD? Sure. I don't know whether Config Manager does that directly itself, but you could certainly automate it, sure. So if you've got something like Orchestrator, again, because that can hook into pretty much anything, you could definitely read that information straight out of Config Manager and use it to update AD. Excuse me? Can you PowerShell it? Yep, you can, because PowerShell understands WMI. So you could grab that information out of Config Manager with WMI and then write it up to AD with PowerShell commandlets. Yep, absolutely, no problem. All right, so what I'm going to do is just deploy 10.1.4 because I think I've tooled around with these machines a little bit too much and they are now unhappy, which is fine. I've been nasty to them. So if I jump in here, all right, I'm going to give up on Adobe Reader like so many people before me, and we'll take a look at something else instead. So AppV is another example of an application which needs those extra dependencies. So if we jump into here, we take a look at the AppV agent, take a look at the properties of the deployment type. There's just one MSI. And go and look at the dependencies. See, we've got a number more. So we need for Visual C 2005, we need 2008, and we need application error reporting. Each one of these is a group of multiple apps. So I could add more extra applications and say, okay, you also need to consider this particular one for 2005. So there's the MFC updates, there's ATL updates. So you can add them all in. Okay. So what I'm essentially telling Config Manager then is that if you encounter any of these, and each of these represent a deployment type with an MSI and an MSI code, so it knows how to look them up and knows how to check for them. If you encounter any of these, you can take it that this particular dependency is okay. Move on to the next one. Can you have a dependency which is registry-based? No, dependency is a deployment type. For that, you'd probably set it up as a requirement where you can establish a registry-based requirement. So you can say, it must be this. But for the example, what you're talking about there, that's a good one for Compliance Manager instead, because one of the big changes in compliance in Config Manager 2012 is that not only can you test for a particular entry like a registry key, but you can enforce it if it isn't there. All right, so back to our x86 client, and just open up these couple of logs while we're at it. And kick it off and go. Yes. So, see, it's checking the requirements. So it checks the requirements first. Okay. So if there's a requirement which is a showstopper for whatever reason, this is where it will come into play. So what we've now got is it's now downloading, but you can see it's got a number of components. Okay, so at this stage, it's running through and evaluating all of the dependencies. So we got, I don't have the same trace log. Hang on. Bear with me, we'll get this done. CMTrace is the logical improvement to Trace32, which I guess if you're a Config Manager administrator, you live and breathe in Trace32 a little bit too often. That's all right. Let's go back in here. CCM, logs, app discovery. All right. And we'll do a filter on this. Time is after 14. All right. So if we take a look at what's going on here, so this is the app discovery log. So this is actually where it's going through and working out what's installed. Okay, so it's gone through and checked whether or not Visual C is installed. It actually is installed because it happens to be a prerequisite of the Config Manager 2012 agent as well. So it's done the same for 2008. It hasn't discovered the fact that the app client is installed. Okay, hasn't discovered, runs all the way through. And finally, what we end up with, especially if we take a look at App Enforce. All right, so finally it works out. It's the one which it doesn't have is the application error reporting for App V 4.6. So it's where it isn't discovered, so it's looking up that MSI code, which has already been established. Is it there? No, it's not. Fine. Kick off that MSI exec. Once that's there, and once it then runs a discovery that it is successfully installed, it goes, yep, cool, it's there, all good. And now we'll kick off the actual application which you asked for. And runs all the way through, runs the discovery again on that MSI code, and done. So if we jump back out, successfully installed. And if we take a look in Programs and Features, we don't see application error reporting in Add Remove Programs, but we do see App Air Client. So it's all done and installed. All right. Now, this is also a good example of an application which has been installed for the machine rather than for the user. Yes, it's been advertised to the user, but it installs for the machine. What that means is that any other user who goes through and logs on will get access to this application. Now, as we can see, if we take a look at something a little bit different. All right. So, on this machine, I've got paint.net installed. Now, this one is a particularly nice example of I've got the same application set up within the Config Manager console. I'll just install it on this one too. And the way I've got it set up is to do a dependency check or a requirement check on the operating system type, because there are specifically two separate versions of the application, one for x86 and one for x64. So each of those has a check on it. Check the operating system, and then install it. But they've got separate MSI codes as well. So if we go back and look in the registry, see which version has actually been installed, you can see the right one has been installed for the correct operating system type. But these ones are installed as users, or they're installed for the user. So this one got installed because there's a primary user of the machine who has a mandatory advertisement of paint.net. Now, that's indicative of the fact that even though I'm logged into the machine and I'm a primary user too, if I go into the control panel and take a look at the program list, I don't see paint.net. It isn't there. Okay. So if I were to run an MSI exec to try to uninstall it, it would say, hey, this isn't actually installed. You can't see it. However, as indicated by the fact that the icon is on the desktop, and if I click on the icon, I can run the program. What that tells you is that the config manager, the app model logic only goes so far. Okay, so if the application is set when it's installed to drop an icon into the all users profile, that's exactly what it's going to do. Okay, so the app model can't intervene to that extent. It doesn't change the way that the application installs itself. It's still, from the app model perspective, it kicks off the install. It can hide certain things from other users. It will check for the MSI code after that. But if the application does weird and wonderful things, well, that's what you get. Another one, which you won't be surprised, is LibreOffice. Who would have thought that an open source product would be dodgy? But what that does, if you install it for the user, which you would think is a relatively fine thing to do, it fails to find the MSI code at the end of it. It shouldn't do, but it does. If you install it for the machine, it finds it, and there's no issue. But if you install it for the user, it will detect that as a failure to install. Even though the application is there, you can launch it, it's all fine. But the user can't uninstall it because the MSI code isn't there. No other user can install it because it's not advertised to them. So effectively, the only way to get rid of it is to rebuild the machine, which is a little extreme. All right. So before we move off deployment types, are any questions? Sorry, I missed that. But better virtualized. Yeah, so Adobe Reader and Paint.net, would they be better virtualized? Well, Adobe Reader definitely. Yeah. Look, AppV, in my experience, is a pretty terrific platform for getting applications out that are otherwise problematic. It's also very good at overcoming compatibility problems as well. It's not advertised as a product to do that, but it's actually pretty good. One of the main advantages of it is that an AppV application operates within its own memory works, its own memory space, and it's essentially isolated from the rest of the OS. So if you have an application which you're a bit suspicious of, no reason anyone would be suspicious of Adobe Reader. They don't have security problems whatsoever. Actually, this occurred at Microsoft. The thing, it was last year when the security flaws in Adobe Reader were discovered. Config Manager was used to strip off every localized version of Adobe Reader and replace it with AppV. So if there is a problem with it, it's isolated. It's isolated from the OS. It's isolated from other apps. It can still fall over, no problem, but it's going to fall over within its own space. So it's quite a good framework to use if you're worried about apps. It's really good for testing as well. Not so good if you need that application to talk to lots and lots of other applications. That's where it gets problematic, which is why AppV5 is promising to be pretty damn good, because you can do stuff like allow individually sequenced AppV5 apps to share the same space. So, yes, they can still affect each other, but they can also talk to each other too. So if you need a certain file type to be able to... what's a good example? If there's a file type which is linked to one AppV program and you want another program to be able to call that same file type, if they're both virtualized in 4.6 separately, that doesn't work. They've got to be virtualized together. But in AppV5, they can be sequenced separately, managed separately, and so on, but operate together within the same space. So. Yep. This is the way it works. Take a look at Config Manager 2012 Service Pack 1 when the public beta comes out, which is pretty soon, and that has native support for AppV5, so there's changes in the console to how it handles that. All right. So, supersedence, which may or may not be something I'm going to be able to show you now that Adobe Reader decided to behave to its true nature. But supersedence is really part about managing the application lifecycle. So an application comes in, naturally over time, it gets superseded. That's the whole point. Now, in Config Manager 2007, what do you do about that? You might spin up some weird and wonderful task sequence that goes through and uninstalls the other one and does a check and does a reboot and installs the next one. And it can get pretty messy, and a lot of administrators don't like having to use Config Manager 2007 or indeed anything else for that sort of lifecycle management. They prefer to just make it part of the SOE because it's easier. But what we can do here is per application, we can allow one app to supersede another app. But it does so in a very nice way. There's logic behind it, which you specify, okay, when you encounter this application, this is what you do. It might be a case of, say, with the MSPs, where you know it's just a patching process. All right, so if you encounter Acrobat Reader XE, which is whichever version it is, which indicates 10.1.3, well, I don't want you to uninstall it. There's no point in doing that. Just run. You're going to patch. That's okay. But maybe another application, you actually want to uninstall it. You want to get rid of it. It can handle that. You don't need to work with tar sequences, or you don't need to push out one deployment to uninstall the first app and then another one to install the next one. Supersedence just manages that. So it handles uninstall, but you can also replace one deployment type with a different one. So the Adobe Reader one at Microsoft is a great example, where you've got locally installed MSIs, but you're not going to replace it with an MSI. You're going to replace it with AppV instead. Or maybe you're going to replace it with an RDS session. All of that is handled in the supersedence area. Has it handled the advertisements? Yep. So what it essentially does is if you have application one, which is advertised everywhere, and then application two comes along and you establish a supersedence from 2:1, you deploy two, obviously, it essentially overrides the deployment. Okay. So if a user has never installed application one, they just don't see it anymore. Okay, it's essentially gone. They can only now install two. Okay, so supersedence then effectively allows you to replace it visually as well. So we'll take a quick look at, unfortunately, maybe not how that works if I can't get the other one installed, but we'll certainly take a look at where it all comes together. So here I've got Adobe 10.1.4. Now, this is a property of the application, not the deployment type. You don't supersede one deployment type with another one. You're superseding an application. You use the deployment types to leverage how that's actually going to work. So we're going to a dedicated supersedence tab, and we're going to add in. So our current app is 10.1.4. We're going to supersede 10.1.3. And what it does is that it jumps through and looks at all of the deployment types that are in existence for 10.1.3 and says, well, what do you want to do with each of these when you encounter them, if you do? So for the MSP, I'm going to say I want to replace you with 10.1.4. So I'll actually say a local install is okay if you encounter it, no problem. I don't want you to uninstall 10.1.3 because that would install the entire application. Don't do that. Same for x86 version, and if you encounter that version of AppV, replace it with AppV. But what you could also do is for all of these, replace it with the AppV version and uninstall the local version of Adobe 10.1.3. Okay, so it's not going to run. If we set this up, it's got a deployment against it already. So if I jump back into one of these applications, one of these machines. All right. Now, I haven't set it up to hide the previous one, but I'll go back and do that. So if you set it up like this, where the user can actually see all the deployments and all the applications which have been superseded, you can end up in an environment where your user's got multiple versions of the application installed, sure. But if we go back and jump into the supersedence, and we untick this option here, which is allow users to see deployments. Tick that off. And do a refresh. And it's gone. Okay. Now, let's just see, out of interest. Go on. You can do it. So while that's having a think, that's honored during operating system deployment too. So if you deploy an application in a task sequence and it's actually been superseded, yeah, it probably will get installed because you've told it to, but it will also then get automatically replaced once policy has gone through. All right, you liked that. So let's go through, what's going on, you're downloading. Nice. Let's take a quick look at the logs. What's going on? So it's gone through, it's tried to find, it didn't detect 10.1.0, didn't detect 10.1.3. I didn't have them installed, fair enough. It's now decided to go through and do an installation. I'm logged on as a primary user, so that's fine. So it hasn't found an existing version of Adobe Reader, so it's going to go through and install 10.1.0 first. Discovered it, so it's done, and it's now going to through and patch it to 10.1.4. So it's going to wait to run. And the discovery for that is the version of AcroRead. XE. So the MSI code won't change, so in this case I've needed to manually specify a detection method. And it's discovered it, and it's enforced, so what we should see, whoa, hello, we don't want that. What we should see is Adobe Reader, and there it is, and it is version 10.1.4. So we're done. Unscheduled learning opportunity averted, yes. All right, so how much time have we got left? We've got about a quarter of an hour, and then we're done. So that's a quick romp through supersedence. So just a quick chat about Package Conversion Manager. Has anyone used it? Nope, yep, yeah. Okay, so it's not part of Config Manager 2012. It's a downloadable add-on, which then extends the console. What it's primarily used for is for when you migrate applications across from Config Manager 2007. The reason being is that by default, applications which come across from 2007 aren't instantly put into the new app model unless they're app V packages. They are, everything else gets dumped into packages, which is essentially considered the legacy stuff. What Conversion Manager allows you to do is to run an analysis across all of those packages and to assess whether or not they are viable for being app model applications. So normally you would only use it if you are migrating, but it's a worthwhile tool to have anyway, essentially because some applications which you want to bring into Config Manager 2012 for the first time, you can't necessarily bring them in the way you would want them to. You might actually have to bring them in as packages. A great example, all right, yeah, okay. A great example, because I should have put in a slide deck, but let's take a quick look. A great example of this is Office. So here I've got a couple of versions of Office, but they're in as packages. Now, the reason being is that by default, when you set it all up, you're calling setup.exe. Okay, you can use MSIs, of course, but if you're using, if you've used the administration kit for Office and you've got an MSP which handles all of your installs, that runs off setup.exe. So you can't import a new application into Config Manager as an app model app calling an exe. It's got to be an MSI or app V. But I've already run an analysis across this. So the Package Conversion Manager add-on essentially expands the console like this, tells you how many packages you've already got, how many it's analyzed. And then it runs a report. So it's especially useful, say, if you're a consultant, you're off at a site, and you've got to run an analysis of 300 packages, you then generate a report. It's just nice to have. But then for each package that you have assessed, and here I've gone and assessed both of these, well, all of them. This one, it's saying, is not applicable. So you see under the readiness column, that's readiness to be upgraded. That one is not applicable because it's just a folder with a bunch of scripts in it. There's no application there at all, okay? But these other ones, it's going, actually, you know what? There is an application. I've picked it up. So what I'm going to do is run a fix and convert. And the issue is simply that it doesn't have a detection method, okay? So when I brought the application in, set up XE, it doesn't know how to automatically extract from that executable how to work out whether that application is there or not. That's why MSI and AppV is so easy and why that's the mandatory one. But all it's telling you is, like, look, this could be an application as long as you provide a detection method that there is a problem. There are no dependencies which we need to worry about, so that's all good. Actually, that raises an interesting thing. A package cannot be a dependency of an application, okay, because they don't have deployment types. They're not part of app model. So when you set up a dependency in a new application, it must be another application with a deployment type. So we'll go through, and it's saying, okay, it's a script-based install, which is a dismissive way of referring to an executable. But what we'll do, we'll say, all right, I'm actually going to generate a detection method which is based on a Windows installer, because when Office installs, it does use MSIs. Okay, so I can call on those MSIs, no problem. Let's browse for it. And Professional Plus, no problem, that's my source. I've jumped into the Pro Plus WW folder. That's the MSI I'm going to use. Pre-populates the MSI code. Okay, we're done. No problem. So we'll just go next. I don't have any requirements. It's all good. Just going to have a bit of a think and summarize it. Yes, I'd love to confirm it, if only you would. I'm sorry? Yep. I could have done a number of them, yep. I didn't actually need to do MSI. I could have done a number of them. I won't bother about MSI. I'll use a registry code or, yeah, sure, any of them, as long as it's got a detection method to work with. So that's been done. And we should see it in applications. You still keep the package. The package is still there. Okay, so you don't lose that, which is especially nice if, say, you've got a tar sequence which references it. You don't suddenly want to lose that. Okay, but now you've got a nice spanking new application with a deployment type, which is calling an executable and has the detection method which we specified, and that's all it needed. So the package conversion manager is a really useful tool to have. So the question is, has it created a new application which you have to push to your DPs? Yes, it has. Absolutely. So if you want to deploy the application as opposed to the package, yep, it's now a new package. It's a new item. You've got to distribute it. You've got to handle it completely separately. Yep. Based on source files, yeah, it's referencing exactly the same source files. But when you do an update DP, if you update the package, it just updates the package location on the DP. If you update that one, it updates that one. So yes, they're talking to the same source, definitely, but they are separate items with separate codes. Can you use a registry key as a detection method? Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Alrighty. So package conversion manager, it's free. It's very, very lightweight. It's about 2 or 3 meg. So just download, install, updates the console, but that needs to be installed on everywhere we have a console. It doesn't need to be installed on the server unless you do your administration from the server. Client side, just a very quick overview. Most of this you've already seen. When stuff is targeted at the machine or when it's already been downloaded and installed at some point, software center is where all this stuff occurs. Okay, so that's part of the local agent. Your users, they talk to the application catalog. So if you deploy apps to a user, especially if they are required as opposed to available as opposed to required, they will never see them unless they go to the application catalog. Okay, that's another area where looking at the automated approval workflows with Service Manager and Orchestrator and extending that can be really, really useful. So you could do something along the lines of use Orchestrator to pull the existing apps, and when there's a new application which has been advertised to a user group, email them and say, hey, you've got a new application available. And the app catalog triggers a policy refresh instantly, so users don't need to wait for all that stuff to occur. It's very, very fast, very responsive. I had a demo slide for that, but to be honest, you've seen it. So we won't worry too much about that. We don't have too much time, so let's get straight on to operating system deployment. So obviously what you want to be able to do is bring these applications in to the OSD task sequence and have them do all their magic there as well. Well, the great thing is that they do. So all of your applications can be deployed via OSD as well as just being deployed. There's a little checkbox which basically says allow this application to be deployed via a tar sequence instead of having to be deployed manually. Okay. Your requirements, your dependencies, your supersedences are all honored. You don't need to do anything special. You set them up as you would normally, but you just call the application that you want, and basically everything just happens magically in the background. It's really rather wonderful. Brings a tear to your eye. One of the big questions with user-targeted deployments is what happens when you've targeted a number of applications to a user and you then go and re-image their machine. What you really don't want is your user then to log on and have to go through and install every single one of those applications all over again. Or if they've got maybe 20 apps which are mandatory, the first time they log on, they just get blasted with applications. It isn't a lot of fun. Okay. With user device affinity, that is recognized during OSD, if so you require. What it will essentially do is during OSD, the user affinity part of the agent talks back to Config Manager, works out which users have been established as a primary user and which applications have been deployed to them, which are required. What it then does, it allows the tar sequence to run through as normal. It then pre-caches all those applications, and in most instances, will also install them. But this is only for stuff that's required. If an application has been installed by a user but its advertisement is available, Config Manager doesn't know whether the user has ever installed that or not. It's not aware of that. You could possibly do tricky things with USMT and scan states and reporting that back, potentially, but that's not native functionality. All right, let's take a quick look. Now, I had earlier on a highly unscheduled learning opportunity, which was that with the user pre-caching. So I can show you how to set that all up. I've done it. It works. I promise you. I saw it work. I really did. I then never got it to work again after that. So I did. There's definitely an element of user error there. JamesBannonIT.com is my blog. Once TechEd is over, I'm going to be pulling UDA to shreds and blogging all about it. So I'm definitely covering OSD as part of that. So keep an eye out for that. So what I've got in here, a couple of sample task sequences. So this is one. It's an MDT integrated task sequence. All right, I'll move fast because we're pretty much out of time. And in this one, I've got Acrobat Reader referenced. Okay, so it's just install. It's a basic install application step, and I've just asked for Acrobat Reader. Now, as you saw earlier, Acrobat Reader has got all of those dependencies. Okay, so if it's going to install, it's got to be a certain operating system type, and it's got to install 10.1.0 first. So I ran that across a client. Now, I haven't logged on to the client, so nothing up my sleeve. And there we've got Adobe Reader. So essentially, at this point, I'm just mapping through to the hard drive of that machine. There's AcroRead. And more importantly, if we take a look at the properties and go into the details, it's the right version too. So the only application which I put into the task sequence is the 10.1.4, which is the MSP patch. So in order to get that far, it then had to go back and also grab the other application, okay, which was not part of the task sequence. So it's worked out the requirements, it's gone through with the dependencies, and it didn't trigger a fail event. So it also managed to detect the fact that it's all there and working. So the primary user and stuff along those lines, yeah. Because it's not being installed because of a deployment. It's being installed because you've told it to install. Yep, definitely. Are there any advantages to doing it this way rather than using SCUP? Look, not particularly. It's just another way to handle it. If you do it this way, then you don't have to integrate SCUP, but SCUP integrates fine. So again, it's one of those things where Config Manager doesn't tell you how to do things. It's really up to you. It's a particularly good method to be aware of, though, because in fact, there are very few vendors that make their products available to be patched via SCUP. So, you know, Adobe, yep, cool, it's great. Pretty much, I think Dell, maybe HP, that's really about it. It isn't much. Now, with the UDA side of things, the only requirement you have, he says, only having it got to work successfully once. So I did mandatory deployments of Paint.net and Firefox. So the deployment that you want is one where the purpose is required, and where the collection that has been deployed to contains a user who is the primary user of the machine you're re-imaging. Okay, so you've established a relationship, and you're targeting software to that particular user. At that point, all you need during the operating system task sequence is to establish a UDA variable. And the variable is, if we jump into our collections, take a look at our OSD collections under deployment. So this is a task sequence variable called SMSTS assign users mode. So it can be automatic, whereby when there's an affinity request, it's just automatically approved, no problem. It can be a pending one. So it generates a request within the console, and you as the administrator go through and approve it, or none, where you say it doesn't matter who asks for what. As far as UDA, the answer is no. Okay, as long as that variable is established somewhere, and there are multiple areas where you can establish it. So you can establish it at the collection level, you can establish it on the boot media that you are using, or you can establish it as a set task sequence variable within the TS itself. Now, the reason why you might want to do that is maybe you can say, all right, on the collection, every machine within there, it's set to auto, no problem. But I'm going to give some bootable media to a couple of techs, and they're going to go off-site and re-image some stuff, and I don't want UDA being processed as part of that. So I'll set it to no on the boot media instead. Okay. So whichever process sets the variable last wins. Now, all I can say is that this really did work, but I can't show it to you. However, we're a little over time anyway, so, you know, hey. Who wants to see stuff actually working? So look, guys, that's it. We do have some related content. So management 302, I don't know whether that one's already been presented on. I think no, good. And also I'm presenting on management 401 tomorrow, which is migrating from Config Manager 2007. So if any of you existing Config Manager 2007 administrators, that could be a good one to go to. There is a related exam, 7243. And that's my email address and my Twitter handle. So if anyone's got any questions, you want to know any more information, you want some more resources, please feel free to get in touch. So look, that is it from me. Don't forget to do your evals, all the resources, which are the same for every other session you've attended so far. Nothing new there. Do your evals, you win prizes. Hooray! And we're done. So, as I said, I will go through the Management 402 Twitter stream if anyone's actually been awake enough to be tweeting during this, and I'll get some independent third parties to assess, and there will be a chopper heading your way. So keep an eye on your Twitter stream tomorrow before 10. I'll sort that one out before 10. Does anyone want to have a crack at the other one? A question that cannot be answered? Sir? Okay.